I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge, text number 13. Mahatmanasumam Partha Daivim Prakritim Ashritya Vajanyanyanya Manaso Kyatva Bhutadem Avyayam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O son of Pratha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Please repeat. O son of Pratha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the description of the Mahatma is clearly given. The first sign of the Mahatma is already situated in the divine nature. He is not under the control of material nature. And how is this affected? That is explained in the seventh chapter. One who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, at once become freed the control of material nature. That is the qualification. One can become free from the control of material nature as soon as he surrenders his soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the preliminary formula. Being marginal potency, as soon as the living entity is freed from the control of material nature, he is put under the guidance of the spiritual nature. The guidance of the spiritual nature is called Daivi Prakriti, divine nature. So when one is promoted in that way, by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one attains to the stage of great soul, Mahatma. The Mahatma does not divert his attention to anything outside Krishna. He knows, because he knows perfectly well that Krishna is the original Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. There is no doubt about it. Such a Mahatma, or great soul, develops through association with other Mahatmas, pure devotees. Pure devotees are not even attracted by Krishna's other features, such as the four-armed Mahavishnu. They are simply attracted by the two-armed form of Krishna. They are not attracted to other features of Krishna, nor are they concerned with any form of a demigod or human being. They meditate only upon Krishna and Krishna consciousness. They are always engaged in the unswerving service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. So the text again. Mahatmano sumam partha daivim prakritim ashritya vajananyanya manaso gyatva bhutadem avyam. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskyadhyade Siddharane. So for those who haven't read the Bhagavad Gita has 700 verses. And it was spoken by Lord Krishna to Arjuna 5,000 years ago on a battlefield. And according to the Bhagavad Gita contains the very essence of all the Vedic literature. And the Vedic literature is a series of scriptures, spoken, sometimes written, which are approximately a billion verses. So you get the whole billion verses in 700 verses. And if you can't read 700 verses, it's too much. They're all summarized in the middle six chapters. There are 18 chapters, so the middle six chapters gives the very essence of the Bhagavad Gita. And if you don't have time to read the middle six chapters, it's all explained in this chapter. So if you understand this chapter, then you've understood 1 billion verses in the Vedic literature. And if you don't have time to read the whole chapter, you can just read the last verse, and that summarizes it all. And if you don't have time to read the last verse, then just chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If you don't have time to do that, just say Hare Krishna. Any questions? So Bhagavad Gita actually deals with a good number of five different topics, namely Ishvara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who is God? Who is the Supreme? And Jiva, who are we, the soul, the spiritual being? And then it also deals with Prakriti. Prakriti, if you don't know what it is, just look around you. This material nature is all Prakriti, material energy. And it deals with time. And if you don't know what time is, just look in the mirror and time will tell you. You'll be able to see time manifested. And then we have the last but not least, we have karma. Karma is, according to Bhagavad Gita, we're all spiritual beings who are living a material existence. And we're living a material existence. That living the material existence is called our karma. We're living out our karma. It's like you go to a movie theater and there are five different movies playing. And you get to choose which movie you want to go and see. The horror movie, the comedy, the romance, the adventure movie, or whatever. And then you go into that movie and you watch the whole movie. And afterwards you come out and you think, I've learned absolutely nothing by watching this movie. But anyhow, I just spent my time watching it. So that's material existence for most people. They want to have a life of comedy. And after the life of comedy, they come back in the next life for a life of adventure. And then romance. And then finally they get a life of lamentation. Why do I waste so much time watching these foolish movies? And then they become self-realized. So that's what this is all about. Bhagavad Gita is to tell us how to live our life in such a way as to find out who actually is the Supreme that we're looking for. Just like one of my godbrothers, his son, was interested in music. Rock bands, specifically. Although he's a devotee, but when he was younger, he was interested. So there was one group called the Supremes. And he had a poster on his wall of them. And underneath it said, the Supremes. Because he had another picture, probably of Radha and Krishna, but, you know, he had two, in his life at least, there were two competing Supremes. One the band called the Supremes, and the other was Radha and Krishna. So hopefully now he chose the right Supremes. So that's what material life is meant for, to choose which we want to take as Supreme. Everyone has their Supreme. Srila Prabhupada was in Moscow one time. Prabhupada always wanted to go to Moscow, to the communist countries. Because in one sense, the communist countries at that time were very ripe for Krishna consciousness. Because as they say in English, if you don't have anything, you don't have anything to lose. So, if you have nothing in the material world, you become quite detached from it. Just like what I heard, there's a new philosophy propounded by a group of people that by 1930, well, all of us will have nothing and will be happy. That's also our philosophy. We'll realize everything belongs to Krishna and then we'll actually become happy. course, I think the people propounding that, the philosophy I mentioned, don't have exactly the same idea in mind. But at least that's our idea, that everything actually belongs to Krishna, because he's the Supreme. Now, if we don't accept Krishna as the Supreme, and our process is a process of understanding how Krishna is the Supreme, and therefore, in the meantime, we may accept so many other personalities as the Supreme. Just like sometimes we find devotees that have headsets on, and we're assuming they're listening to Prabhupada's lectures or some devotional music, and then somehow or another the headphone slips a little bit and you hear, you know, the Rolling Stones. So we've been brought up in a certain way, and actually we have a certain attachment to certain people as being, we look up to as our Supreme or close to the Supreme. So, Prabhupada was speaking to Professor Katovsky at the University of Moscow because he had invited Prabhupada to come to Russia at that time. And Russia was a very poor place. And somehow or another, Prabhupada was trying to explain to Professor Katovsky our philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada tried to explain reincarnation, that the body's changing, but the soul is always the same. And Professor Katovsky looked at him like he was coming from Mars rather than India. And then Prabhupada tried to explain about Varnashram, that there should be an intelligent class of people who actually lead society, and living in a communist country like Russia at that time, Professor Katovsky thought that everyone was the same. Everyone was equally as foolish as he was. Bless his heart. In any case, Prabhupada finally gave him a philosophy that he could understand. He said, actually, your philosophy and our philosophy are exactly the same. Not exactly the same, but they're the same. That everyone has to choose a leader. That you've chosen Lenin as your leader, and we've chosen Krishna as our leader. So you're following Lenin, and wherever Lenin goes, that's where you're going to go. And we're following Krishna. And wherever Krishna goes, that's where we're going to go. And then Prabhupada asked Professor Katovsky, can you get me a taxi? And Professor Katovsky said, no, I can't, sorry. He didn't even have the means to get Prabhupada a taxi. That was Russia and Moscow at that time. In any case, everyone needs a leader. Everyone has a leader, knowingly or unknowingly. Modern education is meant to convince us that the government is our leader. We should respect them and appreciate them and whatever else. They're trying to do that unsuccessfully in most places. But someone is always the leader, whether it's a rock musician or a movie star or a sports hero or someone. Nowadays, sometimes people appreciate their dog as their leader. As I mentioned, I saw on the internet that there's a class of people now in America, at least, I don't know if it's going to, of course, whatever happens in America, sometimes used to catch on around the world, who believe that they're dogs. They want to be dogs. Just like Prabhupada was giving a lecture at one university, and he mentioned that if you act like a dog, that's called karma, you act like a dog, then in the future life you may become a dog. So one student raised her hand and said, Swamiji, I want you to know, you say that if I act like a dog, I'll become a dog. But I just want you to know, I don't mind if I become a dog. As a matter of fact, I want to become a dog. So Prabhupada raised his hand and said, you have my blessings. So people are now dressing themselves up like dogs. According to the report, the man spent $15,000 to buy a dog suit. Complete dog suit. The only thing you could tell, you could see of him was his eyes. Otherwise, he's completely covered by the dog food. And he only eats dog food. And he spends most of the day in the park playing with the other dogs. So he really wants to become a dog. And I'm sure Krishna will bless him. But the goal of human life is not to become a dog. And if you have to become a dog, at least become one in a place where they have good dog food. India is not such a good place for dogs. At least not in Vrindavan. In the cities, I think nowadays people have gotten to taking care of their dogs better. But in Vrindavan, they throw rocks at the dog. So if you become a dog, don't become a dog in Vrindavan. Oh, anyhow, Vrindavan's not so bad. But in a normal village, don't become a dog. It's a very bad life. So here, Krishna is trying to convince us that he's the Supreme. And that being the Supreme, he lives in a world which is quite different from our world. It's a world of he lives in the eternal world, where everyone is happy and blissful all the time. And everyone has complete consciousness, complete in the sense that they don't know everything, but at least their consciousness is so complete, they can relish happiness to practically an unlimited degree. Everything is, to them, is unlimitedly wonderful and always becoming more and more wonderful at every moment. It's kind of like what they're trying to portray in the movies, modern movies. We're living, the actual world that we're hankering for exists, but they're trying to make it into a 3D movie on this planet. But it's actually there in the spiritual world. So, Krishna says that he's God. And of course, people all think, well, he has a right to say he's God. Because nowadays, you can say, if you imagine yourself to be anything, you can claim it. So, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita spends his time trying to convince us that he's God. Why not? Let him think he's God. Just like one lady, one reporter went to one University of Oregon in America, in Portland, Oregon. And as I mentioned this before, he's, how much is 5'11" or 5'10"? It's around, how many centimeters is that? 170 centimeters or something? 180. So, he's, of course, they use inches there. So he said, if I was believe myself to be 6'10" woman, Chinese woman basketball player, would you believe me? He asked the students. And at least the ones that were on the video, they said, yes, if you sincerely believe you're a Chinese woman, 6'10" basketball player, sure, I'll accept that. So Krishna is spending 700 verses trying to convince us he's God, so why not? Okay, you can be God. I'm God, you're God, everyone's God. But Krishna doesn't, he's not so liberal. He's claiming he's the real God. So that's a little controversial. He's gone a little bit more extreme than most people except nowadays. But anyhow, he's trying to convince us that he's God. Or at least we should accept that there is some God. That all the planets moving their orbits exactly on time are not by chance. The sun doesn't rise at a appointed time and set at a appointed time by chance. We don't eat food and we digest it. Hopefully we digest it and assimilate it. And the unwanted parts are eliminated. That Krishna has made such a fabulous machine that it comes in two forms. Of course, nowadays in America they have 72 forms it comes in. But here in Sylvania, I think they still accept two forms, male and female. Now, as I've said before, if the scientists can make a machine, a male machine and a female machine. And when they get together, they make little machines. that would be a nice scientist who would probably win him the Nobel Prize. He can make a male Rolls Royce and a female Rolls Royce. And when they get together, they make little Rolls Royces. And all you do is have to feed a little gas and oil, and it grows up and becomes a big Rolls Royce, and you can drive it around. Matter of fact, you could have a whole family of Rolls Royces. But can a scientist do that? I don't think so. But Krishna has made male machines and female machines, 8,400,000 species, and they make little machines that grow up to become big machines and keep on making more machines. So who's the greatest scientist? Now, if we don't believe that there are male and female machines, and I guess you can go to America and you can tell people you're a 6'10" Chinese basketball player. But anyhow, we have faith that Krishna has actually made these machines. Otherwise, who made it? The only historical record of a man making a machine is not really a historical record. It was a science fiction movie called Frankenstein. Apart from that, there's no record of anyone making a machine that came to life and made other machines especially. So with a little intelligence, we can understand, first of all, that we're eternal. Our bodies are not, but we're eternal. The person who's aware of all these bodies, and that there's a person, a supreme person, who's created this wonderful playground for us to play around it. With all the other little kids we're playing around with, or sometimes they're not so nice to us. Anyhow, we decide to play in the playground with all these other kids, and sometimes we get smacked around in the playground. Sometimes we smack other people around the playground. If you want to play in the playground, then you have to play by the rules. But Krishna has made it for us because we want to, but here Krishna is offering us an opportunity to come under the internal energy of Krishna, the Daivi Prakriti. And it doesn't require a whole lot of different activities. Krishna in the next verse will say, Satatam kirtayantamam yatantastra dridavartaha namasyantashtamam bhakta nityukta upasate. Always chanting my glories. In other words, the first thing is we have to hear that we're eternal. That's part of Krishna's glories, because all of us are part of Krishna's glories. Everyone is a unique spirit soul with our own unique qualities, all expansions of God or Krishna. And we all have our own glories. Just like we read in our books about, for instance, here is Mother Jasoda and Krishna. So every one of us has some personal relation with Krishna, which is glorious. And that relationship is eternal. It's even going on now, as we speak, because Krishna has never left us. Although we've forgotten about him, he's still in our heart, trying to guide us back to him, or let us play around in the playground, called material energy. So we hear about Mother Jasoda, and we think it's very nice, it's glorious, these activities Krishna has with his devotees. So also Krishna's activities with every living entity is also glorious. So we can hear about it, and therefore gradually we'll be able to see how actually even this material world is part of Krishna's activities, and that there's another world, a spiritual world, where the activities are even sweeter than they are here. And the result of that is that we'll become interested in doing things which will actually be pleasing to Krishna and revive our natural loving relationship with Krishna, rather than compete with Krishna to become a 6'10" female Chinese basketball player when you're only 5'10" and you're a male and you're from America. Rather than doing that, to actually try to have a nice relationship with Krishna, a pleasing relationship. Because he's actually a nice person, although he's gotten a very bad reputation lately. Everyone's criticizing him for everything that happens. But actually, he's not responsible for it. Just like there was one rabbi he wrote a book, Why Bad Things Happen to Good People. So his conclusion is, or was, that God is actually a nice person. But he's become so old, he's become senile. And therefore he can't keep the material world together anymore. He's trying to clutch it, but he has, he's shaking due to arthritis. So he just can't keep things together. But there's a rumor, however true or false it may be according to the book, that God is thinking about retiring and allowing some other younger angel to take over, and maybe things will go better than they are now. But we understand that Krishna is a person. He never grows old. He's eternally youthful. He's eternally all-attractive. But we have to develop some desire to meet him. We can't force him to reveal himself, because that's not our relation with him. Our normal relation is that of loving exchanges. We love him and he loves us. We want to serve him and he wants to serve us. But if we arrogantly demand that he reveal himself, it's not the right loving reciprocation. Otherwise, if he revealed himself, we'd be very disappointed if we didn't love Krishna, because then we find out that we can't compete with him. So if we want to compete with God, he can't reveal himself. But if we want to follow Krishna and serve him and love him, then he can reveal himself and probably love us also in a loving relationship. So that's what Bhagavad Gita is about, so that we can become a little bit more determined to do what he wants us to do, so he can reveal himself to us. And then when he does, anityukta upasate, then we'll see how wonderful Krishna is, how beautiful he is, how loving he is, how affectionate he is, and then we'll fall in love with him also. And then we'll always want to have remain in our relationship with him, and nothing will be able to deviate ourselves from such a relationship. So I'll stop there. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Thank you for an inspiring lecture. I would just like to ask, when you mentioned about that we are prone to accept other leaders than Krishna, so how can we see, how can we recognize that we are somehow or other accepting some leader besides Krishna, and how to actually recognize that?
Well, for instance, did your mother ever tell you to do something?
Yeah.
Do you ever remember what your mother told you to do? Like, you know, wash your hands. Did your mother ever tell you to wash your hands before you eat?
I think so.
Do you wash your hands before you eat?
Yeah.
Do you remember your mother telling you that? Mm-hmm. So you're serving your mother. She was your leader. So Krishna also wants you to wash your hands. So your mother was a representative of Krishna. Unknowingly, Krishna in her heart was guiding her. So you just have to remember, my mother was a representative of Krishna. Krishna in her heart told her to tell me to wash my hands. So then you can be grateful to Krishna, to your mother, as being an instrument for Krishna. So then you can see your mother in relation to Krishna as your authority. Otherwise, we may just think, Mom told me to do it, maybe I shouldn't do it. No. Your mom told you to do it because Krishna told her to do it. Anything else? Actually, this is probably the first time I ever was 2 minutes early. Oh, there it goes. Okay. This clock is always wrong, so can't believe everything you see. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.